How is it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. It is 7:16 here on a Tuesday morning with JR, Simmer, and Hammer. We are here until 10 o'clock this morning. Mike Johnson is our TSN Hockey Insider. He's going to join us in an hour from now. And then after 9 o'clock, we didn't really spend any time, touched on it very briefly yesterday, but Canada's win at the World Cup, the Davis Cup, the most prestigious team tennis event there is. We won it for the first time in its 100 and whatever year history on Sunday. But it was done very early in the morning in a place far, far away. And unfortunately for the other guys, their television feed crapped out. And so there was no video evidence of it all unfolding. Oh, and Canada played a huge soccer game at the same time. And so it was, I don't want to say it was ignored. Certainly tennis fans were all into it. But I think average sports fan was kind of like consumed by the soccer thing and kind of missed it, quite frankly. Yeah. So we're going to talk to our tennis analyst, John Horn, about what that all means, Canada winning the Davis Cup later this morning.
I know Roger has retired, Nadal, you know, starting to battle injuries. Is the Joker still kind of in his prime, JR? Like, still, I mean, he's obviously still a very good player. Or do you think he's on the other nine?
I think he's there.
Yeah. And so I guess asking, you look at the season, and I think FAA had won.
He's been really hot in the fall.
Well, exactly. And so I wonder if a lot of people in the tennis world are looking at a changing of the guard. I guess is a little premature, but is this the next big thing? He certainly, to me, athleticism, just based on the Canadian component versus Shapovalov, that's always been the part that stuck out for me. He's just such a gifted athlete, and he's just had a great season. So excited to see him come Australian Open.
Well, and the thing for him is sort of an inability to kind of up until the fall when he started winning some tournaments coming through in the clutch, right? That's Felix always had advanced, and it was kind of like when the chips were down, it's like, yeah, darn it. Yeah, I didn't. Where Chapo, it's more between, well, it's for two things. Been he had some injury, including in this Davis Cup in the semifinal. Where he had a bad back and he had to pull out of the doubles when they beat, was it Italy? I believe they beat in the semi. And Felix had to go in and play the doubles. Dennis was supposed to, but he had the bad back. But he powered through and won his singles match in the final versus Australia. So for Dennis Shapovalov, it's some injury, but also between the ears, right? That's the thing with Shapo. He gets so down. You ever watch the matches,
well,
right?
And
he gets so down, and he's yelling at who's like his mother is there. I'm not sure. I think that's just a tennis thing. It's like, why are you yelling at the people in the stands? You're the person screwing up here.
John McEnroe, but we should have, based on the Ottawa and having almost taken the eye out of the ref back in the day here, unfortunately. It's really trailed him. The other part, when I watch him play, too, he appears to love five-set matches, Jer, in the majors. And
especially in the opening round.
Oh God,
get yourself good and tired.
But I don't know how he has enough energy. Like, every serve and every shot he makes is just like, it's so aggressive, it's so powerful that it's like, wow, how can you play like that and expect to go deep in tournaments, especially when you got to play the best of five?
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to get to the soccer in just a second. Big day today at the World Cup. We're at the time of the year now, end of November into December, when we're getting all the lists of greatest things or biggest things or whatevers of whatever year you're in this case, 2022.
Yeah.
Merriam-Webster. Of dictionary fame.
Okay.
Are dictionaries actually a thing any longer? Remember the Encyclopedia Britannica was something you used to order kids and it used to come and it was like,
it's all online now.
Yeah, it's all online.
All these things. But the other thing that I guess is a real change, guys, over the years is a simple phone book. And I guess people probably love it. Like, you can't reach out to anybody anymore unless you get their digits, right? You know, I don't conceptually, if you go back 40 years ago, there's not a chance you thought that the phone book would ever disappear, right? Like, that was a staple. Even when we were flying back, we had to go through Montreal. We walked into one of the gate areas, and I knew it was an older part of the airport. There was actually a phone bank.
Really?
I was like, wow.
Is there anyone actually using it?
Oh, God, no. No, okay. No. Nobody would even, you know, what would be the purpose, right? No, nobody. Who on the planet doesn't have a cell phone? And then when you look at that and you do joke with kids, I like when they see the old rotary phones or stuff like that, like you kind of pick it up and then you say to yourself, like, what the hell would I do with this thing, right? No way you'd realize that was an actual telephone.
But who even wants to talk on the phone anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody even has conversations on the phone.
These phones aren't
with you.
These phones are not built for talking. Like, that is not, when you put it against,
starts to hurt.
When you can put it against your face, you know it is not meant for, it's not a talking device. It's a texting device.
Yeah. AJ is the one guy that likes to talk on the phone.
Oh, does he?
Well,
yeah.
Only to you.
Yeah.
Once or twice a day.
Yeah.
Seems just to wants call. To check in.
Seems to call a lot.
Anyway. Has he been calling you since he's been on his trip?
No. That's all good. No, okay. He's enjoying his holiday over in Qatar.
Yeah.
When your phone rings,
uh-huh.
Your initial thought is AJ.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Nobody else, daughters, wife.
Never.
Family.
Never.
Sim or I, we never call you.
Nope.
It's AJ. I wonder what's up in AJ's life right
here. Yeah, and it's usually something, some sort of self-inflicted disaster.
Come help me get my car out.
Yeah.
I do think, and I first of all, I think that's incredible that you'd call your boss to help you with your car. But it
that takes some cojones.
He sees you as a super bud. Like I just don't, like,
we've
talked about that with moving and stuff. Like, there are just certain people in your life. Like, I just wouldn't think to call my boss when it comes to my car.
I think we need, I don't know if the, and not that it was calling the boss, but just about the concept of, and I hate to go, this is, I don't think we talked about it in earnest when this, so at some point last winter, when he went away for a while or whatever, he lives downtown, mm-hmm. just off the market.
Yeah.
And the place where he parks his car, he lives in an apartment and it's kind of like a three-story thing. And his actual parking spot is, it's kind of a weird thing, but it's between the street and the building.
It's almost like a paved sidewalk.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a single spot. And he walks to work, which is awesome because he lives close enough. So he doesn't drive his car all the time. Yeah. And after football season is over, he's obviously not driving. So it's only when he has to go out to broadcast from a Sens game, right?
Yeah.
And either the Sens hadn't been home for a while, or I don't know what was going on. Anyway, he hadn't moved his car in like 2 weeks or something like that. And in the meantime, there had been two snowstorms. The whole thing had been plowed in, mm-hmm. so his car was surrounded by this huge bank of snow. And at no point in that intervening time before he actually had to move his car to get to a Sens game did he think to himself, I should probably, like, get ahead of the snow. Like, I should probably, like, shovel out where I would drive out because at some point I am going to need my car.
Yeah,
that concept never occurred to him until an hour before he had to leave to get to the rink to do a show.
Yeah.
And at 12 o'clock on a Wednesday, there aren't a lot of people that you can call at that point and say, hey, can you help me dig out my car? So I'm sitting at my desk. I pick up my phone. It's AJ. What could it be? I need some help to dig out my car. Otherwise, I won't be able to make the show. So there I was.
So what's beautiful about that, a few things. I would never call anybody work-related because I'd be embarrassed. So what I would do is call somebody, and you can't tell anybody. But the fact that he did a bit of a reverse guilt trip on you, basically, if you don't help me, someone else is going to have to go out and work the game, is absolutely incredible.
It was well done, actually. In retrospect, actually, yeah, you're going to have to find somebody else to work because I can't get my car out because I didn't think ahead to keep ahead of the snowbank, which was frozen. Right? That was the thing. When you leave it long enough, it just freezes into a giant ice mountain.
Moments like that should only be reserved for family members, right? Like, that should only be your daughters that are allowed to make those calls.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Like, I'm just trying to imagine, hey Bezos, I can't get my van. It's a little stuck, and I can't get these packages delivered. Can you come help me?
Mind just hopping over here.
Otherwise, you have to find another truck. It's a Christmas rush.
Yes. You know what? That's a great point. You expect it from your kids, right? You expect those calls from your kids.
But that's the kind.
You don't expect it from a 45-year-old.
But that's the kind of relationship you guys share. It's a bit of a father-son.
When do you have to pick him up at the airport in a few weeks?
Oh, my God.
Is that coming?
Oh, that's what Terry Marcotte does. Anyway, I don't know how we got there, but we did. Anyway, Merriam-Webster, the dictionary people, that not the dictionaries exist, have come out with their word of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The word of the year. Which is I think it's a not necessarily a new word, but a word that all of a sudden everybody was using. So among the contenders, and actually there's a few here that are actually two words. So how two words can be in the running for word of the year, I don't know. But among that is cancel culture.
Yeah.
and also Queen's Consort. Okay. That had to do, obviously, with the passing of Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk of the Queen's Consort.
Okay.
Among the single words for word of the year, Omicron, for reasons that don't need explanation. Oligarch, that became a big one with the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Merriam-Webster word of the year is gaslighting. Gaslighting is the word of the year, according to Merriam-Webster.
Yeah, and I heard that yesterday, and then they kind of explain on a rival station as to what it means, JR. Is it mean if somebody's making fun of you or somebody's...
It is defined as, quote, the act or practice of grossly misleading someone, especially for one's own advantage.
Oh.
Or the psychological manipulation of a person, wow, usually over an extended period of time, that causes them to question reality.
So was AJ gaslighting you?
Well, maybe this is where this whole story circles and the two ends meet. That's entirely possible. Entirely possible. So there you go. And there was also a word in here that I'd never heard of that apparently was a Wordle. Remember when Wordle was a thing for about a month or two?
And I muted everybody that would post it up on Twitter.
Yeah. I don't know if it's still a thing, whether people are still doing it. Thankfully, as you said, they're not posting on there. So, hey, it took me four turns to get the Wordle. The word was loamy. Apparently, that was a word.
Oh.
L-O-A-M-Y. That had a lot of people stumped in Wordle. That was also a word of the year.
Apparently. I don't even know if it's a word. I'm trying to think of other kind of random things that have become very popular, but I'm probably a year behind as I usually am. And I think about Squid Games, and I think about different phrases or things that kind of came out of nowhere that became super popular. But, that's all I've got to add to the conversation.
Okay, there we go. All right, 7:28. So World Cup continues today. So we're into the final games now of the group stage. So this is the time in which they make the, so there's four teams in each group, so two final games in each group. They play them at the same time because there was back in the day when they were played at different times, depending on the standings going into the final game, you could have shenanigans where depending on the result of the first game, let's say, the other two teams could decide amongst themselves, hey, let's just kick it back and forth for 90 minutes and play for a tie because then we both advance. So it took them a long time, but they finally got around to, how are we gonna, as best we can, try to eliminate that? So they said, why don't we play the games at the exact same time so that that can't happen? So they have that's been in place now for I think a few World Cups and major competitions. But regardless, so Group A, which is has the Netherlands, Senegal, Qatar, and Ecuador in it. They'll kick off at 10 o'clock today. So the Dutchies are through with a win or a draw, and Qatar's already been eliminated.
Yeah.
The other one is Ecuador-Senegal. The winner of that one also moves on. If that one ends in a tie, then Ecuador move on and Senegal will be out. So that one's pretty straightforward. Now, the ones this afternoon at 2 o'clock, so you got England and Wales playing each other, which is just a great rivalry, period. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the U.S. and Iran, which is a rivalry for... for reasons that go well beyond sports, needless to say. But as we go into the game games today, the England is in the driver's seat. They need a win or a draw, and they will move on to the knockout stage. And Wales needs a win and some help. But the U.S.-Iran thing is interesting because the U.S. needs to win. If it's a draw, then Iran will actually move on, and the U.S. will be out. Iran is a, you know, for those that follow it closely, they know this, but I think for casual observers, you'd go, well, U.S. should be way better than Iran. It's not necessarily, the U.S. has been pretty good in this World Cup, and they tied England, and that was a great result for them. But it's not like Iran necessarily will be a walkover. I mean, England beat them, you know, pretty one-sidedly.
Yeah.
But given everything that's around this game, there's a lot of intrigue into that U.S. Iran.
Yeah, it is interesting, Jared, because I also think, and if you look at the Iran team, for the way that they started the tournament by not singing the anthem, I think there's a lot of people actually cheering for the players. What they're not cheering for, of course, is the country. And I got to say for myself, I don't like the fact the U.S. might move on and we're not moving on. But yeah, you're right. And also, I don't know if you guys saw, there was, as typical, over the weekend, there was a big brawl between some of the English and Wales fans. And you talk about
before the actual match?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you talk about wailing. Like, this is a full-out Donnybrook in the streets of a bar. Just people get knocked out. And
that include the guy that was on Welcome to Wrexham, the show? Have you watched that, by the way?
No,
the Ryan Reynolds show?
No, I haven't, Chair.
Okay, so one of the, you know, it's one of, you know, there's a bunch of people who live in the town of Wrexham who became central, who become central figures in the show. And one of them is just kind of this super fan. He's a divorced dad of two sons, and, you know, he's a good talker. And you always, you know, when you're doing, excuse me, shows like this, you try to find those people and they fall into your lap. Yeah. Anyway, I'm watching the Wales U.S. game. And after Gareth Bale scores on a penalty kick to tie the game, they show a shot of the fans, and there's like 3,000 Welsh fans apparently in Qatar, and they do a close-up of like four or five fans jumping up and down, and there's that guy, the guy from the show,
awesome.
I'm 100% positive, they didn't say it, is there at the World Cup. Yeah. So anyway, he looks like the type of guy who might like to share the brothers five.
Okay,
let's just put it that
way. Yeah, no, they were, you know, I'm assuming it started in the pub. They ended up on the street. They're going at it. And kind of back to the Iran point as well, I think there was so much emotion in that opening game, JR, that as you said, as they kind of level off, and I got to think the players for Iran, such mixed emotions, right, of wanting to play well, wanting to be professional, but all of us understanding that even the players themselves not happy at all with what's happening in the homeland.
Okay, so there's your World Cup schedule for today. We'll have games at 10 and 2 here on TSN 1200, of course. Canada has one final match coming up on Thursday versus Morocco. That's a 10 a.m. kickoff as Canada tries to get at least a result, a first-ever win at a World Cup or even a first-ever point. We mentioned, we were talking on Friday when Lloydie was on the show about because 3.7 million Canadians had watched the Canada-Belgium game, which was in the middle of a Wednesday afternoon, which was the second most watched sports event on TV in Canada all year. Only the Super Bowl had higher ratings.
Wow.
Better than any NHL playoff game was the Canada-Belgium match. And you're thinking, well, Sunday morning, first of all, there's just a lot more people available to watch because it's Sunday and a lot of people aren't working and they're home and there was a lot of hype and, hey, can Canada win the game and get back in the World Cup? So we figured that the number would only go up from 3.7 million. They announced yesterday, TSN did, that 4.4 million Canadians watched that, and that's the average audience. So when it's when it peaks, it's well above that. But in terms of the average audience, which is the thing they kind of flout, 4.4 million Canadians watched the Canada-Croatia match on Sunday, making it now the second biggest televised sports event in Canada this year.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. And I don't know, JR, when it comes to it as well, ability to fill the pubs even at 11 a.m. And to change the drinking rules to 7 a.m. I also wonder, how do you factor in, like, when it comes to Olympics and stuff like this, JR, as far as those numbers, right? Like, if old Broadway Grill out in Riverside South is packed with people,
right?
A lot of draw. You could feel it leading into it, like the morning on social media. Just the excitement, the hype, and you look to Thursday, and I think people still interested. I guess that'll be somewhat interesting, right, now that we've been eliminated. I'd love to see what the numbers end up looking like for the grand finale against Morocco, and then we look forward to 2026, and gosh, having it here in Canada, just going to be absolutely incredible to build up to that event.
So FIFA announced, I don't know if this figure had been made public before, or it was just announced yesterday, but they announced what the total prize money is for the 32 teams at the World Cup is.
Okay.
That will be how much you get out of that pot depends on how far you go.
Okay.
So what do you think is, if you had to guess, if you don't know, do you think the total prize pot is for the teams to share from the World Cup?
Whoa. $2 billion?
That's a bit high.
Okay. Well, throw me a freaking bone here. $800 million.
$800 million. Okay. Showcase showdown. You going 801 or what do you doing?
Man, 80. I'm not gonna go 801. I could go a dollar and just go under.
Yep.
But I'm not gonna be that fool.
Let's go, Barker's Beauty.
$500 million.
$500 million. You're very close. $440 million. Will be shared by the 32 nations at the Men's World Cup in Qatar. Yep. And again, depending on how far you go, that speaks to how much money you'll be paid. So Canada, of course, will be out, will not advance. So they get, along with the other 15 countries that don't advance, $9 million U.S. plus $1.5 million that it was supposed to be used in preparation and to cover all your costs in the lead up to the tournament. So $10.5 million U.S. dollars is what Canada Soccer is going to get for Canada going to the Men's World Cup. You know what? So $10.5 million U.S. You know what the total budget for Canada Soccer was last year?
No.
Their annual operating budget was 30 million Canadian.
Wow.
They're making 10.5 million US just for getting to the World Cup. And that explains why we had this ongoing contract dispute between the players, not only on the men's side, which, you know, remember they refused to play one of the games back after they had qualified back in, what was it, April, I think it was, where the game ended up being canceled. And there's also a contract, I don't know if dispute is the right word, but they still don't have a contract with the women's national team either, because these players, these athletes are looking at it and going, you know, we're providing the service here. We want a bigger piece of what's going on. So you know, when we see now the number, and I don't know if they had an idea of what the amount of money that was going to be. If Canada had advanced further, they'd be making even more money. But if they were waiting to see what the prize announcement was going to be, and then going, okay, it's 10.5 million US. If the and the men and women are supposed to, whatever the contract ends up being, it's supposed to be that the both teams get an equal amount. All right, because the women obviously have been awesome for more than a decade now for the Canadian women. So whatever it's going to be split between the men and the women. But what is that number going to be? That's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I certainly give a lot of credit to the U.S. women, JR, for kind of leading the way. But what was very interesting, and I do look at this practically, I don't disagree on the sharing part of it, but I kind of thought in the United States side, I'm like, well, the women on the United States side, there's no way they generate the money that the men do, but they actually generate more money. So it is part of what's generated, but absolutely they should be taken care of. And then the other part of, and in professional sports, you know, for the Ottawa Senators in the NHL, I assume the NFL is the same thing. When it comes to merchandising, that goes into a pot, is shared by everybody. I'm going to assume that Soccer Canada gets all of the money from the merchandise they've sold. And I'll tell you what, that must be, if we talk about the 10 million US, the amount of merchandise that's been moved in the last couple of years here from a Canadian perspective, that's got to be a huge figure as well. And that was a big part of Alphonso Davies talking about, hey, if you're going to be selling Alphonso Davies shirts here, I want a piece of the action.
He's the only guy that got that though, right?
Yeah, that's tough.
I think, last I heard that they sort of had made a somewhat last-minute deal with him. Okay, you'll get a little piece of the pie here. But no one else on the national team has gotten that. Not that anyone else has nearly the profile that Alphonso Davies is. Interesting note, by the way, because Alphonso Davies scoring that goal, the first ever goal by Canada at a World Cup. That was the moment and will still be, despite the fact that we won't move on, a celebrated historical moment in Canadian sport that apparently he had the wherewithal or the presence of mind. He changed his jersey at halftime and wore a different jersey in the second half. And usually at the end of games, right, players will swap jerseys with players from the other team. So a Croatian player asked Davies for his jersey, so he gave him that, but it was for the jersey he wore in the second half. The goal from the first half, or the jersey from the first half that he wore when he scored the goal, that one he said, I'm keeping for myself.
Yeah. So must be an interesting thing, too, because I was trying to think practically, and I thought of Alphonso Davies, but I also know during the telecast, they talked about one of the Canadian players that, what's the great Modric, that loved Modric growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wonder if this is a bit like speed dating. At the end of the game there, like, obviously Davies is the guy.
Yeah.
So on the Croatian side, who is the guy? And then if you're kind of going up, like, do you match up properly with who you want to put your jersey with, right? Like, you kind of look at the guy like, come on, man. Like, I'm way better than you. I what am I going to do with that?
Yeah, okay? it's interesting about whether there is a hierarchy or whatever.
Yeah, like if you're
Davies, are you swapping jerseys with Luka Modric because he is a legendary Croatian player?
He didn't though, right? He ended up switching with it was another name though, because that's the name I was looking for.
Yep.
And what would you say? And this would be a fun number to find out. Would you say that as far as Canadian jerseys sold, that he would represent 95% of it? Like, do you think the number would be that high?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he dominates it,
if
right?
If they showed a television, well, if they show the Canadian fans from the front, you can't really see what jersey they're wearing. If they showed people from the back, I've seen some pictures of people out, like AJ has posted some pictures of Canadian fans outside.
Yeah.
It's pretty much all 19s.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot. I see a few Jonathan Davids. But by and large, it's all Davies for sure. All right, Canada-Morocco comes up 10 a.m. on Thursday. That's the last group stage game for Canada. And then their World Cup will be done. 7:41, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll turn our attention back to hockey. Sens, after flying back from the West Coast yesterday, are back on the practice ice today, get set for their next game against the kind of reeling New York Rangers, who lost last night to the Devils. We'll get into all of that when we return, right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. Welcome back, 7:49 on this Tuesday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer, quick text at 12-1200. We are discussing phone books and the fact that phone books don't exist any longer. And Jason texts in and says, with no phone books anymore, what does Hammer sit on to see over the steering wheel of the minivan? Great question. Hammer?
Okay. I'm not the phone book guy. All right, that's Lever Sage, not this guy. I'm fine. I'm a regular-sized adult.
You have to do.
Need a boost.
Does the minivan have a power seat that that goes up far enough that
the
helps you?
Crossover vehicles. See, you can raise the seat up
over the hood
if needed.
Yep.
I don't need to. I can see just fine.
The modern invention to not embarrass people. He has the blocks on his pedals.
I can reach the gas and the brake just fine.
Can you?
Clutch in the car.
That's actually pretty funny because Mira's legs are actually longer than mine. And when she goes to sit in, which really speaks to my poor posture, she's always like, with your legs, why is the seat further back than what I'm in? And I literally, I almost recline back. I cannot sit up straight. That's probably why I stand for the 4 hours when I'm doing this.
There you go. All right, 7:50. Quick update on the traffic. I was mentioning that something was going on westbound 417. Turns out it's an accident. Left lane is blocked at Bronson, and so everything's having to squeeze over in the two right-hand lanes. So, again, that's westbound affected accident at Bronson. We'll get you an update here in about 7-8 minutes. On where that is at. So, hockey, Sens flew back from California yesterday. They're back on the practice ice at 10:30 this morning and will host the New York Rangers coming up tomorrow. In fact, they're back-to-back with the Rangers because they play in New York on Friday night, and New York lost to the Devils last night. Then they've lost 8 of their last 12. So things are not going so great with the Rangers right now. And for the Sens, with 2 straight wins, it's always that first game back from a road trip. Always, it seems to be, for whatever reason, a difficult barrier for teams to get over. But they did make a couple of roster moves yesterday. Could only be paper transactions or perhaps more permanent. But Lassie Thompson, Kevin Mandalese, both returned to Belleville. Mandalese, of course, backed up because Anton Forsberg had what they called a minor injury. So we'll presume that perhaps he'll be good to go to at least back up. I'm assuming Cam Talbot will continue in the number one role for now and play tomorrow night. As far as Thompson goes, he was a scratch on Sunday versus the Kings. So we'll find out again if he's going to be back now that Thompson and Zub are back or whether he remains down in Belleville. So that was the Sens news from yesterday, those roster moves.
Yeah, and very interesting, Jerry. I don't think I was here when Zaitsev actually went to Belleville. But it's interesting from that standpoint of Zaitsev still in Belleville, right?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, so
-2 in the one game I saw.
Yeah, the fact that you're willing to continue to pay a $4.5 million player to play in the minors versus calling somebody up just to sit in the press box, I give a lot of credit to ownership. Those are little things there and kind of a transitional spot where a team is for sale, where all of a sudden somebody could say, listen, if you're going to sit somebody in the press box, already paying this guy one-way money, might as well park him in the press box. Not to mention, it's not a big deal. We talked about this with JBD, a guy missing the odd game. But just as far as keeping a rhythm, for JBD and Thompson, not a whole lot of sense sitting in the press box on a Wednesday night against the New York Rangers if you have the opportunity to be playing in Belleville.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll find out. I thought Thompson was okay. The one game in, I think it was Vegas, actually, he had a couple of nice plays. Couple though he got burnt on a little bit. I'm sure.
He got walked on one of the highlights.
Well, yeah,
saw,
but
right?
That was more. We discussed that. That was more of a Nick Holden thing.
Okay.
Nick Holden, for some reason, because the player was coming down, Nick Holden decided, I'm not going to play between the dots. I'm going to go over near the boards and sort of left Thompson to take the guy who walked him. And I think Thompson was kind of like, because he did give him the big ole, but it was like, Nick, isn't that supposed to be your guy? Aren't you supposed to be squeezing him into the middle here a little bit? So,
but a good veteran knows to tell the rookie, hey, man, that's your guy. And in the case of Thompson, I didn't see much of the sample size, but he and JBD, it is quite simply still a spot where neither has shown on a consistent basis to be strong enough one-on-one. It really kind of as simple as that. And I mean, Thompson to me, he's not going to run people over. He's probably built more like a Thomas Chabot. So But that's the part when I've seen, and that's just the, you know, slow and long process of becoming a defender. And then neither of them are monster guys. Both of them are going to have nice NHL careers, but it is a long process.
Yeah, and again, I hate to typecast in my mind either of the players, because it does take time to develop. You got to be patient with defensemen and everything. They're both former first round picks, mind you, you know, in the latter half of the first round, but still pretty good draft pedigree. But I would say in a small sample size, I've seen them both at the NHL level. I still think there's the potential for they still need some growth, in my opinion. I don't look at either of them and I don't think either of them are flashy players to begin with. Thompson's got more of an offensive game, I think, and JBD's more of a steady Eddie. But I don't know that from either of them that I kind of get the vibes of, okay, lock it down, full-time NHLers. I think part of it is born from the fact of the Sens have so little depth that I think when you compare them to some of the defensemen that are at the bottom of the Sens roster, the more veteran guys, you kind of tend to elevate them a little bit. But I think if we're being honest in terms of the what you need from an overall NHL defenseman, I still think that, you know, if they spent some more time in Belleville and more time with Troy Mann, that probably would still benefit them. I haven't been blown away.
Exactly. My point. I agree. And you know, for both of them, and again, that is the tough part of, and it's always think back to what Pooley talked about, getting to the point where you get enough reps, and this is always the coach, hey, play me more, show me more, all that JR, is really just getting enough. And that is one of the things that is a positive on lesser hockey teams. And I'll use Tumi Stützle as an example last year. I'm not so sure if you're a competitive hockey team that you are transitioning him to center, and especially with the injuries, but you were afforded to play a lot of games last year where he was able to, you know, get comfortable. And he's shown a lot of improvement. And for defensemen and situationally, yeah, it becomes tough. And the other part for the Ottawa Senators, quite simply, it's not an easy team to play on, because in their own zone, they are not insulated properly as young players. So, yeah, lots of reasons there, and agree with what you're saying. Still think both of them have a nice NHL future, though.
Yeah, for sure. You can see that they have an NHL-caliber skill set. Again, I guess in a perfect scenario, one or both would have taken a bigger step this year. I think it's been a good step, but still not where I kind of look at it and go, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I thought JBD in the first half of training camp, I thought, okay, kind of lock it down. And then the whole team had that nightmare game in Belleville. And then really from there, it just unraveled. So totally agree with what you're saying.
All right. So we'll keep our eye on potentially a roster change or two as they get set to get back on the practice ice today. And as I mentioned, the Rangers coming to town, they got beat by the Devils last night. And right now, New York's on the outside looking in. Heard some comments from Gerard Gallant after the game last night that he's questioning, you know, kind of where you know, hit, first of all, the job that he's doing, but also what his team is doing. And Shesterkin, whose stats are, well, last year they are just off the charts. 935 save percentage. You know, he won the Vezina as the best
goalie.
And
that masks a lot of problems.
Yeah, exactly. This year, I mean, if you look at his stats, they're not nearly as good as last year, but they're decent. Yeah. But as you said, the you know what he did last year did mask a lot of what the Rangers had going on. And this year, when he's not quite as good, you're seeing a team that is not quite as good as well.
Yeah.
So.
And one of the things they're running into, JR, is when you look at the big four of Fox, Panarin, Zibanejad, and Kreider, right after that, there is just quite simply an incredible drop-off of offense. And as I discussed yesterday, in the case of Kako and Lafreniere, Kako in particular, and Lafreniere for the first pick overall, you need to see, though, both of those guys right now, if they had been drafted and slotted properly, just like it's happening here in Ottawa, they should be top six forwards. And right now, and after the playoffs last year, were they on a line with Kopp? Was that the line, the two of them? Or was it three young guys? It was three young guys.
Yeah, it was not Kraft.
Chattel?
Heedle.
That has not, there's been no forward progress. So, yeah, you look at that team, you kind of look at the numbers from last year, the goaltending. Not that Gorgiev played much or the factor of pushing Shesterkin, but yeah, it is. If you can shut down that big four, you got a pretty good chance to beat the New York Rangers.
All right. So mentioned the Devils beat the Rangers last night 5-3, and with the win, New Jersey is now first overall in the NHL, 2 points ahead of Boston, and the Bruins have 2 games in hand. And that has led us to today's TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question of the day. An overall look at the NHL. We're at the quarter poll. As the saying often goes, you kind of know what kind of team you have at this stage. And in terms of the four teams, these four teams, I think to various levels, the four most surprisingly good teams so far this year. Which team has been the biggest surprise so far this season? The 19-4 Devils, the 18-3 Bruins, who of course had all the injuries, the 16-5-3 and winners of, I think, five in a row, Seattle Kraken, or the 13-6-1 Winnipeg Jets. By the way, the Kraken are seventh. So the Devils are first overall. Bruins are second overall. Kraken are seventh overall. The Jets are eighth overall. Which team has been the biggest surprise so far this season? I'll go first since I always go last. Mm-hmm. And you guys, I always look like I'm stealing your answer. I will go. I actually go with Seattle. They were so bad last year that I didn't have. And I kind of looked at. Now, they added Burakovsky from Columbus, who's their leading scorer. But if you kind of look through the rest of the team, and Matty Beniers, who played at Michigan, joined the team late in the year, is one of the favorites to win the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year. He's new to the team this year. But in terms of outside players, they haven't added a ton. Same coach. Grubauer has been injured. When he hasn't been injured, he's been awful again. Martin Jones has actually given them decent goaltending. His stats are, I mean, his 903 save percentage is below NHL average. But they're getting wins. I am going to say the Seattle Kraken. Of those four options, Seattle is the biggest surprise to me compared to where I thought they would be.
Yeah, I'll start with the opportunity to crow a little bit. And I do believe coming into the season, I was bullish on the Winnipeg Jets. And I didn't know it would be like this year. But I thought. And
just
I know,
checked the season predictions.
Yeah, see, I thought I was. I hope I'm accurate. But I've always looked at them and said, hey, you have the talent. And the obvious and easy would be New Jersey. But I'm going to go with Seattle. I thought Hakstol's a terrible coach. I didn't think they had anything, and that to me is, and not that New Jersey's not a shock, guys, but I'll still go with Seattle. And I guess I look at this also in reference to every time we kind of bring up where Ottawa's at, and we talk about injuries, we talk about other things, all the changes made over the summer. You look at a situation like Seattle and just ask yourself, how is that possible that they are that far ahead of the Ottawa Senators right now?
You had Winnipeg, by the way. You're right. You're all over it. You had them in fourth in the Central Division.
Yeah, so. Bold, very bold.
You had them making the playoffs. You had them in fourth. Behind.
Well, but that's where you just slide in gently. Like I placed my chip on the table there. Didn't? And I don't think I even ranked them 1-4. I just said, here's your four teams.
You had them ranked 1-5, actually, because you had five teams from the Central making the playoffs.
Okay.
So you had them fourth. So you're right. Very bullish on the Jets with Sean Simpson. Hammer, you make it a sweep?
I'm not making it a sweep because I do think that the Kraken will come back down to earth a little bit. I had no clue.
It's not about what will happen. It's right now.
I know, but it's right now. But I still don't believe in them right now.
You don't have to believe in them.
I did not see the Devils just losing, just having three losses?
Four.
Four losses? That's just absolutely insane. I had no idea that the young talent didn't know a lot of these names. Now, having the Sens played them a couple of times now early on this season, yeah, you know who they are a little bit, and you know how hard they work and how fast they are in the transition game and the goaltending they're getting. It's amazing to see that the turnaround that this team has had from last season. They're playing some fantastic hockey, and like you keep saying, JR, they're fun to watch.
Yeah. And that's not what we're used to with the New Jersey Devils back from Jacques Lemaire days of almost 30 years ago. All right. By the way, with almost 500 votes in already this morning, the Kraken do lead the way barely over the Devils, both at 43-44%. The Bruins are at 11%. Just 2% are surprised by the Jets. For a Canadian team, the Jets are very much under the radar. I mean, we talk more about Canadian teams like through national media, etc., and it's like nobody's talking about the Jets at all. And I guess speaks to the fact that no one's talking and voting for them in this web poll question either. Share your thoughts on our TSN 1200 webpage at tsn1200.ca. Which team has been the biggest surprise so far this season? We'll put that question to TSN's Mike Johnson. He will join us coming up after our top of the hour news and sports update, which is coming up next here on a Tuesday morning on Sports Radio TSN 1200.